This is a replay of the Thursday night, March 9th, WGN show. We started at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and so it is that Miss Robert Blake is gone. But I have to tell you, I was convinced, you know, it's one of those things where that he died a long time ago, 89 years old. And, yeah, I got plenty to say, including all about Bonnie Lee Bakely. Boy, was this a soap opera. When I said this to John, I said, well, remember, he allegedly murdered his wife. He said, what? Who? And I said, oh, well, I guess we need to march down memory lane again. Yes, that's coming up on 22 years ago in May. All right. So with that in mind, Eduardo is in Midway, and he's kicking it off. Welcome, Eduardo, back to WGN Radio. How's it going?
Yeah, Raleigh, it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah.
I was tempted to call yesterday, but I actually called that topic in earlier about why people aren't working.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, just briefly on that my two things, people are stealing or they're living with mom and dad, you know, family members, so they're getting source of income that way, one or the other.
I don't know. It's not just young people, though. It's people of all ages. And like I say, I'm not concerned as to why. I'm more concerned as to how. You know, during the pandemic, we realized, well, they could be getting checks or they could be running scams or whatever. But now those checks are over. How are they still pulling it off?
Yeah. And then the SNAP thing is being scaled back.
Right. Right. So yeah. I'm very curious. Obviously, somebody has a money tree and I'm not privy.
Yeah, and I got this month is one of my favorite months for my company because we get a performance company bonus.
Yeah.
Which is this week, and then in a few weeks we'll be getting something, I don't know why they call it attendance bonus, but it's really, that is involves when you don't call the same day that you're going to be off.
Oh.
That's kind of like scheduled. So if I say next week I'm going to be off, then that's scheduled. But if you call it like the same day, you know, at the last minute, then that's an occurrence.
That, in some cases, is a fireable offense.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it depends why. Obviously, if you're hit by a bus, there's extenuating circumstance. But for somebody who is somewhat regularly just saying, yep, couldn't make it in today, I would think that their career is very short-lived at that particular company.
Yeah, so they give us like 5 days. If all your days that you want to be off are scheduled in, you're awarded 5 pay days, so that's coming up in a couple weeks. So,
well, good.
Yeah, March is a nice. Yeah, it's nice, but a lot of people don't work for a corporation. So, yeah, I mean, that's really something how they're doing this.
Well, they're trying to, A, instill better habits in their workforce, and B, retain people.
And they are running the credit card, because that's high.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Good. So, all right, Robert Blake. Now,
yeah.
Did you know he was not dead? I mean, I hate to say it that way, but I was convinced he'd been gone a while.
Yeah, and I only knew he was alive because I would turn on Carson. You know, Carson comes on before your show on Antenna TV.
Well, yeah, but those aren't current.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah.
You know, he could have been long dead.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in a long time.
Well, 89 years old, he probably hasn't been doing all that much lately. But
with that episode where he was, you know, going to kill his wife.
Yeah, this is the big thing. Bonnie Lee Bakely. And, God, I remember this story like it was yesterday because she was killed after they ate at Vitello's. And that was one of my haunts in Studio City, a restaurant I'd eat at from time to time. But in any event, he was acquitted. But when it all came out about Bonnie Lee Bakely, oh, man. Now, firstly, she was born in 1956 and she died in 2001. So she didn't have a lot of years. This was already her 10th husband. And
well, in Hollywood, people have 20 how well, many marriages they have? I mean, they bounce like one after the other.
Well, sure,
Hollywood.
Sure, yeah, right, exactly. But what was interesting is that when you read her background, there were no shortage of people who would want to kill this woman. But I was firmly convinced that probably Blake had something to do with it. And, you know, I know those who were privy to some of the details would have said, and justifiably so. But regardless, it was quite the scandal at the time. And I found it interesting that John had no idea it even happened. So I guess if you wait long enough, you forget everything.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got the temperament.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and like I say, he had a somewhat checkered past from the beginning. And was a child actor at a time when residuals weren't the norm. So he was Mickey in Our Gang at Ranford.
Yeah, I didn't know that was the same person. Yeah,
yeah, ran for decades.
Bendy, yeah.
But he didn't get the money of it. And he was in Cold Blood and did very well in that and got an Emmy for Judgment Day. So he had some strong acting credentials, but he also had had some interesting personal habits as far as that goes. His real name was Michael Gubitosi.
He was Italian?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
His father was an Italian immigrant. His mother was an Italian-American. And their whole goal was to have their three kids succeed in show business. And one of them did. By the time he was 2 years old, he was performing in a vaudeville act with his brother and sister, Three Little Hillbillies.
Oh, and that's what led up to the Little Rascals.
Yeah, well, his family moved to L.A., and his mother immediately put all three kids in as extras. And little Mickey Gubitosi was plucked from the crowd, and that's how he got the Our Gang role. And, he played with a number of megastars. You know, he played in 1946 with Humphrey Bogart in The Treasure of Sierra Madre. And, like I mentioned, In Cold Blood, which was great critical acclaim and more. But I think nothing more sensational than that meeting with Bonnie Lee Bakely at a jazz club in 1999.
Right.
You know, and he was 67, and she was still in her 20s. Oh, yes, indeed.
I've been noticing, and I guess this is more like a Hollywood thing, more than, I don't know, in regular life, but you notice the Hollywood people, the age difference.
You know, I think it's
so big.
Yeah, but I think it's anybody with money. And you can do that. You know, if you got yeah. money or power, yeah, you're going to attract a younger mate. And Yeah, I got the greatest compliment of my life while John was in the hospital. I went to get him a sandwich at a deli that he really wanted, and the woman, saw me, and I said, "Yeah, I'm here to pick this up for my husband. He had a stroke." And so she looked at me and she said, "Oh, he must be much older." I said, "No, we're roughly the same age." And when she found out we were septuagenarian, she said, "Oh, man, well, I'd never believe that about you." Well, if you saw him, you wouldn't believe about him either. But yeah, people with money and power very often can delight in all sorts of fantasies. And there's no shortage of...
That could stretch the age difference. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the stars... Well, like Monty Lee Bakley, her whole goal in life was to be with a star. So, ended her life, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, what had happened, like I say, she was, man, you shouldn't speak ill of the dead, and I know that, and she was murdered and all that, but nonetheless, she was a little girl from New Jersey, and she dropped out of high school at age 16, tried to be a model in New York, and, that really didn't work out. She moved to L.A., but to support herself, she started a mail-order business selling nude pictures of women, including herself, to men. And this is before online.
Oh, okay.
And then she ran Lonely Hearts ads in magazines advertising for a male companion. And after communicating with the men, it was a scam. She would ask them for money for rent or travel expenses. And eventually, this woman bought several houses in Memphis, Tennessee, and a house outside of Los Angeles based on this scam. And she tried to be a singer and an actor, and none of that worked. And because of her mail order business, this woman was arrested several times for everything, including, by the way, drug possession, and convicted, and arrested for attempting to pass bad checks, and worked on a penal farm after being fined and plea bargaining down to lesser charges. And she was arrested in Little Rock for having 5 driver's licenses and 7 social security cards under different names. And she was using the IDs to open various post office boxes in order to run her Lonely Hearts scam. But her big thing was pursuing celebrities. She told everybody she knew in her life that, her life would be complete if she could, marry someone famous. She said, "Being around celebrities makes you feel better than other people." All right, there's a word for that. That word is warped. In any event, she tried to pursue Jerry Lee Lewis, and she actually became friends with his sister, Linda Gail Lewis, and she claimed a child that she had was Jerry Lee's. It wasn't. But then she went to L.A. pursuing Dean Martin. She said she dated Frankie Valli when she was a teenager. Frankie said, "No way," and Gary Busey. And then she got involved with Christian Brando, and, there's a whole story there, too, obviously. And... Because that was the deal where he wound up convicted of involuntary manslaughter and got 10 years in prison. And that was the murder of his half-sister's boyfriend. That was a mess. But anyway, while he was in prison, Bakley began writing him and sending her photos. And then they began a romantic relationship. And theoretically, they had a kid, Christian Shannon Brando. Except the kid wasn't Brando's. The kid was Robert Blake's. And so she had met Robert Blake at a jazz club. And so after Christian Brando was born, she told Blake, "Well, you might be the father." So Blake said, "I want a paternity test right now." And it determined that he was the father. And so they changed the name of the kid to Rose Blake. And Blake agreed to marry her. But this was one of the weirdest marriages, because she had to sign a temporary custody agreement, and any visit she'd have with Rose, her child, had to be monitored because Blake was the custodial parent. And the agreement stipulated that if either spouse decided to end the marriage, the other spouse would retain custody of the child. Now, by the way, had that ever happened, I'm not sure that any court would have upheld that, but that was the deal. Now, so they get married. They never live together. She lives in a guest house beside his residence. And this was a bad marriage to begin with, because she never stopped her mail order business. And Blake was, hiring private investigators and all that kind of stuff. And, so it was ugly. But then Blake took Bakley to dinner at Vitello's on Tohunga Avenue in Studio City. And afterwards, she was killed by a gunshot wound while she was sitting in the passenger seat of Blake's car. And he claimed he returned to the restaurant to collect a gun that he had left there and was not present when the shooting occurred. The gun that Blake claimed he had left in the restaurant was later determined not to have fired the shots. And so that was her death. But they arrested him. And there was a big trial. And he was ultimately found not guilty. And it was interesting. There was another count that was deadlocked. But in terms of the murder charge, not guilty. And so while the prosecution was establishing motives and all that kind of stuff, they didn't have anything that proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he was the killer. You know, people might have thought so, but they just didn't have the smoking gun, so to speak. And so it was interesting because the district attorney at the time was Steve Cooley, and he got on TV and said that Blake was a miserable human being and the jurors were incredibly stupid. I thought, that's good for a DA.
You were near with Blake, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So during the trial, the defense was alleging that Blakely was a drug addict who was using her oldest daughter for prostitution. And so meantime, there was a civil trial. And, you know, it's not double jeopardy anymore when you go into civil, which makes you wonder. But anyway, he was found liable for the wrongful death of Blakely. And so the three older children sued him, and that was a really fascinating case because the deal was the attorney for Blakely's family called Blake's longtime bodyguard's girlfriend to the stand and asked if she believed they were involved in the crime. Something no one had ever asked her before. You know, in other words, if the bodyguard and Blake were involved in the crime. And it was absolute dead silence. And, you know, as well as she breaks down in tears, and then she says, "Yes, I believe they were involved." The jury ordered Blake to pay those three kids $30 million. So he files for bankruptcy because he's got debts of $3 million and, you know, assets of zilch, basically. And so the appeals court upheld the civil case verdict, but cut the penalty in half, $15 million. Still, I don't know what they saw, if anything, because he didn't have the money. But so, yeah, that was just a three-ring circus.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I was so surprised that John didn't remember. Of course, he wasn't in California at the time. I mean, this was sort of like OJ. This is on the news every day.
Yeah, and that's almost kind of like the Alec Baldwin thing. Cause
oh, yeah.
With the gun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, she, and you know, as I say, it's unbecoming to speak ill of the dead, but I never heard anybody say a good thing about Bonnie Lee Blakely. So there you go.
No, I mean, given the history, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but so yeah, so 89 years old for Robert Blake, and if they say only the good die young, I guess he's proof.
Yeah, so you're coming up to a break here. Can I just request a song here, if you can?
Yes, what would you like to hear?
Sarah Bond.
Yeah.
And it's, let me spell the word. It's T as in Tom, R-I-S as in Sam, T as in Tom, E. Trees Tay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're talking Brazilian oldie. You like Sarah Burns,
right.
Sarah Vaughn's version of Trees Tay?
Sarah Bond, right, yep.
Yeah, it's Trees Tay. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there are so many versions of that, including Sergio Mendes' trio. So,
oh, yeah, Brazil 65, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, it became Brazil 65 when they re-released it later, but originally it was just the Sergio Mendes trio. I've got a ton of versions of that, and I'll look for Sarah.
Oh, okay.
And if I don't find Sarah, well, I'll play you somebody else's, but I'll definitely play Trisha.
There you go, yep.
All right. My
okay.
Pleasure. And, yeah. And so, obviously, Portuguese. And, yeah, a lot of people have done that. All right, you'll get it.
Thank you very much. Have
my
a good
pleasure.
Weekend.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so I'll pick it up right there with Trees Tay by somebody coming up on WGN Radio.
Triste a viver na solidão, na tua cruel de uma paixão. Triste. triste é saber que ninguém pode viver de ilusão. Que nunca vai ser, nunca vai dar, que o sonhador tem que acordar. Tua beleza é um avião, demais pro pobre coração, que para trás te vê passar só pra se maltratar. Triste é viver na solidão. Tua beleza é um avião, demais pro pobre coração, que para pra te ver passar só pra se maltratar. Triste é viver na solidão.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's the first time that song was released in America, and actually it was on the Equinox album, so we're already talking about Brazil 66 with that, and by far as I'm concerned, when it came to Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66, Equinox was the piece de resistance. It was the absolute best album he ever did. And of course, yeah, you're not going to find it on CD, that's for sure. And that was recorded in Hollywood at Sunset Sound. And it was a terrific, terrific album. But Tom Jobim, Antonio Carlos Jobim, wrote it. And in Brazil, everybody did it, from Gal Costa to Elis Regina, you name it. But it was huge. Of course, Triste means sadness. But Antonio Carlos Jobim had several versions of it, including this one. Sublime all the way around, as far as I'm concerned. And Tom Jobim recorded it several times, including a duet with Elis Regina, which he did many, obviously, before her untimely death. But there are probably tons of versions of this, including João Gilberto, who did it as well. But it was Eduardo who wanted to hear the Sarah Vaughan version of it, and I'm guessing because he hadn't heard any of the others. But Sarah did a nice job with it too.
Sad is to live in solitude, far from your tranquil altitude. Sad is to know that no one ever can live on a dream that never can be, will never be. Dream away, wake up and see. Your beauty is an aeroplane, so high my heart can't bear the strain. A heart that stops when you pass by, only to cause me pain. Sad is to live in solitude.
Well, to say the least, it was a loose translation, and that is one of the hardest things, is to translate those songs into English. There's a couple who used to do most of them, get their names right now, but Bergman, I think, was one of them. Anyway, it just doesn't work for me, but the original stuff is just terrific. All right, so there you have Triste and Sadness, although in the English translation they call it Painful. Yeah, like I say, a little poetic license in that, but still an altogether wonderful beautiful song. And if you can get the Equinox album, and like I say, you'll get it on vinyl. It's not on CD unless somebody's booted it, which is always possible. It's just got some great stuff on it. Yeah, okay. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Brian, on the southwest side of Chicago, going to talk about people not working. And so, Brian, I don't care why. What I want to know is how they're getting away with it. How are they eating?
Very carefully and with some smoke and mirrors. And by the way, before we go on too much further, my best wishes for John's speedy recovery and rehabilitation.
Thank you, thank you.
But yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to mention is the way people are quote-unquote not working, and I do say that very ironically, is because they are working. But they're working in ways that the government isn't picking up for statistics. They're working side gigs. Some of them, yeah, they're sponging off for relatives, but the relatives have got to get the money from somewhere, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, they're working side gigs. They're working under the table. They're working like dogs. In some cases, they're qualifying for and getting public assistance, whether it's through the government or through charitable, say that three times fast, food pantries and the like.
Yeah.
You know, but people are working just as hard, if not harder than they have been, but they're just doing it in ways, for all sorts of reasons, you know, that the government is not picking up.
Interesting. I don't doubt it.
Sometimes to play with statistics, the companies on one side will make advertisements to want to hire employees. And yeah, the people who are actually working for the company want more people working with them. But the HR departments and the corporate bosses set up a level of requirements for the job application that not even the founder of the company could meet, much less people who are really out in the workforce. And in some cases, they're asking for people who just aren't in that part of the country. You know, when we had a non-anti-energy government in place, they were advertising here, there, and everywhere for people to go up to the Dakotas to work as,
of course,
as laborers. Drilling for oil.
Sure.
And that is some very good paying work. It's also some back-breaking hard work.
Yeah.
Not as bad as working in a coal mine, but...
But it's up there. No, absolutely. And yeah, places in Nodak were just flooded with people. You betcha. So, yes. Well, it's interesting. I don't doubt it for a moment because they're getting the money somehow. They're existing somehow. And that's been... You talk about some people say, well, you know, they're making money on social media. No, not most of them. You know, the amount of people who are is a small percentage, to say the least. But
yeah, and the people who are actually making money as digital content creators, whether it be YouTube or TikTok or whatever, for every person who's got interesting enough content and is able to get sponsorship... In that, there's 150 to 300 500 people who are working just as hard without a lot of luck.
Exactly, exactly. Might be 5,000 of them. Yeah, you betcha. So we hear about these success stories, but percentage-wise, it's a fraction of a percent, of course. Well, it's interesting, and I guess people are at a point where their priorities are such where they're saying, you know, screw this. I'm not going to do what I don't want to do. And I do think in some cases, yes, it's funny money, and the corporations are stretching people thinner and thinner rather than hiring. But on the other hand, it happened again today. I went into a grocery store, and the deli counter was closed. And there was a sign on it, sorry, closed, no work. You know, we don't have any workers here.
Well, sometimes it's unrealistic expectations on both the labor and capital.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to try to not get dialectic on you.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
I actually spent most of my adult life training to shoot communists, not be one.
I love it. That's great.
When the worker wants $35 an hour to slice turkey breast at a deli, and the owner of the deli only wants to pay 79 cents, well, there's unrealistic expectations on both sides.
Of course there is. And, you know, you mentioned that, and one of the logic fallacies is when you hear somebody will say what a worker is worth. And the reality is, to an employer, it's not what the worker is worth, it's what the job is worth. And so people who are in a situation where they're going for basic minimum wage jobs, who want it to be $20 an hour, well, to that employer, it's not worth it to them.
Yeah, that's really going into economics 801,
yeah.
If you're looking at college catalog.
Right, right.
Because...
yeah,
it's all part of the market, and the market has got so many invisible hands that it boggles the mind, really, especially when you take any kind of morality system out. And even Adam Smith, the god of capitalism, was the very first person to tell you that capitalism, unlike all the other isms that try to run our lives, is not a moral system, and it needs the moral system add-on available from somebodyelse.com.
Well, what's really interesting at this point in time is I don't care what the economic system is, we no longer need full employment. We are at a point with robotics and automation and everything else that the idea of everybody having a job isn't necessary to produce the goods or even the services, unfortunately. You know, the steno pool's been long gone. And so I think this is something that none of the economic systems have really factored well as yet.
Well, capitalism... If you don't take it to its greedy, amoral extremes, does factor that, because in order, the market has got to come from somewhere. Somebody's got to want your products. And, yeah, you can build the biggest, the best possible bean peeler you can imagine. But if you do it entirely with robots, and the only people who wanted bean peelers were people who worked at bean peeler factories, well, where's your market?
Well, yeah, to its basic essence, you can go there, but I think overall at this point, we don't need the amount of worker bees that we formerly did, and regardless of the system, and I don't think that's really been accounted for as yet. And I think I won't be around; it'll be a brighter mind than mine figuring it out. But I think that we're at that point where not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur.
Well, entrepreneurs are great, but they're not the entire, you know.
Of course they're not. Well, exactly.
You know, some total of everything, and they've never been. Somebody has got to actually do the core hands-on minerals and plants and animal stuff type work. And, you know, people have got to eat, you know. Even without pollution, you know, in that hypothetical, you know, merry world where all drinking water is free, you know, you will die without water if you try to go without drinking anything for a week or two. But after a month or two, if you don't get something to eat, you're going to die also. So you got to be able to find a way to eat, get a way to drink fluids and
right.
That gets into too many.
We're getting dangerously serious here. We don't want to do that on this show. But I got all your points. But it's still fascinating to me how people are pulling this off right now.
Well, they're pulling it off because the people who analyze statistics aren't finding it convenient enough to pick up how people are working. It's also like the unemployment rate is actually based on how many people are claiming to be actually
right. No,
working.
I know completely. Yeah, we don't want to go there.
You're actually measuring, taking one number off of three levels.
Right, right. No, yeah, I go crazy when we talk about the unemployment rate. So let's not. My blood pressure is rising as we speak. But all good points, and thank you very much for the call.
And the one thought on a Robert Blake thing, maybe he did it and maybe he did not do it.
Sure.
It is kind of a shame that he's remembered mostly for that, because as an actor, you know, his performances were damn good. I remember when I was a kid, Tony Beretta, you know, the Beretta TV show on ABC, was fairly well rated, and I actually watch and look forward to it when it came on every week.
Oh yeah,
because the guy.
Yeah. No doubt he was a good actor.
But, and he performed it very well on top of that.
Yeah, he was great at that. But also no doubt that even apart from Bonnie Lee Bakley, he was always kind of Peck's bad boy. I mean, he had that side that was well known in Hollywood, but it did not...
Oh, absolutely. It was trying to think of a funny way as well as an accurate way to put it, but it's basically... unstoppable force meets immovable object, and that was the relationship between
he and Bonnie Lee,
Robert Blake, and the Bakley woman.
Yeah, good deal. All right,
he was a gold digger, and he was.
He was Robert Blake. That's really all you need to say.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call. I sure appreciate it. Do it again soon, Brian.
I've got a quick request.
Oh, sure. What do you want to hear?
Squeeze it in.
Yeah.
You're on a bossa nova kick, so if you could get in Jean Gilberto's version of Desafinado.
Oh, sure. Okay. You bet it. I will.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. All right, so 888-876-5593. We'll get an update from Leah and Marcus Hook. Yeah, about the missing gal in Florida. And more Robert Blake comments and Desafinado coming up on WGN Radio.
Si você disser que eu desafino amor, saiba que isto em mim provoca imensa dor. Só privilegiados têm ouvido igual ao seu. Eu possuo apenas o que Deus me deu. Se você insiste em classificar meu comportamento diante musical, eu mesmo mentindo devo argumentar que isto é bossa nova, que isto é muito natural. O que você não sabe, nem sequer presente, é que os desafinados também têm coração. Fotografei você na minha Rolleiflex, revelou-se a sua enorme ingratidão. Só não poderá falar assim do meu amor. Ele é o maior que você pode encontrar, viu? Você com a sua música esqueceu o principal. Que no peito dos desafinados, no fundo do peito, bate calado.
WGN Radio, I'm Rolly James. Desafinado, written by Antonio Carlos Jobim, and he first recorded it, I think, around 1959, early in 59. But there are over 307 versions of that, and Joao Gilberto was the first vocalist, and who you're hearing now, of course, and that was on that February 1959 recording. But, as I say, over 300 artists did that, and Antonio Carlos Jobim wrote it with Newton Mendonca. And, yeah, a standard, absolutely a standard. You pretty much can't find anybody who does samba or bossa nova who hasn't recorded that. So just, and of course, Astor Gilberto did it with George Michael. And, yeah, so there you go. And Wanda de Sá, who was originally in the Sergio Mendes trio, did a nice version of it. And she did a nice version of Triste, too. So there you have it, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And Desafinado means, well, they say it means off-key. It actually is out of tune. And, yeah, that's one of the neat things about bossa nova. A lot of it is interestingly off-tune in some cases. So... let's see what we're going to find out from Leah in Marcus Hook. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Rolly. How are you tonight?
I can't complain. How about yourself?
Okay. I'm getting over a cold, but I'm okay.
No.
Yeah, this is the second week. It's getting better, but it was really in my lungs, and it was really bad.
Ugh.
But I'm getting better.
Good.
We learned this tonight that evidently Chelsea had been on medication Adderall.
Oh.
And she may be having an adverse reaction to it. So she may not be coherent.
Well, that's very interestingly. I'm fascinated by that. I assume they still have not found her.
No, they still have not found her.
But this goes to the heart of what I thought is that she, on some level, left on her own volition. Now, maybe not in her right mind, so to speak, but this didn't, especially when, you know, her car's found on Sample Road and, you know, on Pomelo Beach, it didn't sound like an abduction. Hang on, don't go away. We'll talk more about that. Yeah, the drugs people take and the side effects are just totally alarming. So we'll talk about that next hour and more here on WGN Radio.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, I got a boy child coming. He's gonna be a son of a gun. He's gonna make pretty women jump and shout. Then the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. Everybody knows me. I got a black cat bone, I got a mojo too, I got the John the Conqueror, I'm gonna mess with you, I'm gonna make you girls lead me by my hand, then the world will know the hoochie coochie man, but you know I'm here. Everybody knows me. Yeah. Well, you know the hoochie-coochie man. Everybody knows me. Yeah.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. We have two more hours to spend together tonight, and that's for Detective Chuck, who asked for Muddy Waters' hoochie-coochie man last night. Or maybe it was the night before. Well, it's this week anyway, so hey, it didn't take me that long to plan. All right, so we're talking to Leah and Marcus Hook about this disappearance of this young lady in Jacksonville. And interesting about the Adderall. Now, normally, and of course for people who are unaware, Adderall is really just amphetamine, is basically. And it's originally prescribed for ADHD. But there are a lot of off-label uses for that drug. Why was she taking it?
I don't know. Yeah. That I don't know. She was prescribed it.
Yeah.
I know that.
Oh, yeah. No,
but I don't know why.
Yeah, I hope it wasn't for weight loss. Some people misguidedly, because a side effect of Adderall is weight loss, there's a couple things. Number one, it does all sorts of tricks on your brain, and the process is not worth it. But number two, the minute you're off it, you gain the weight back. So it's not a good use.
Well, I was on it for that a couple years ago, and it did nothing for me.
Right. Well,
nothing.
Even when it does, you'll gain it back, you know. So.
Well,
It
did nothing. It wasn't. They said, "Oh, it'll be like the FenPen." No, it wasn't.
Well, it's going to be different for you when you're talking about things that are affecting brain chemicals, and worse than that, you have some people who are taking Adderall and also taking one of the various SSRIs like Prozac, And that is a horrible combination. But even without that, the idea of psychotic reactions, the count five on Double Shot Records, is not unusual here. And so,
yeah, I heard paranoia is a side effect.
It is. It is. But you can have a full psychotic break with this stuff. It's much more than just paranoia.
That's what we're thinking.
I'd be curious why she was prescribed this, how long she'd been on it. And it's also a thing, it can be very addictive, and you don't want to stop it cold turkey, but you also don't want somebody to prescribe it, you know, long term. Something tells me at 27 years old, she probably wasn't doing this for ADHD. So what the hell was she doing it for?
And I was wrong. She does have a daughter, 3-year-old daughter, with her father.
Okay. So 27 years old, and just disappears from Jacksonville. But I'm almost positive they're going to find that she left of her own volition.
She had a psychotic break. Yeah,
not necessarily in her right mind. But so now you've abandoned the car, and of course, you don't know.
The car's been towed.
Right.
To the police impound.
Right, but I mean, she was not with the car. So at some point, in some way,
but why haven't the police pinged her phone yet? They won't ping her phone.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not. They're not telling you they won't ping. They're not telling you they'll ping her phone. But I don't know. In many of these cases, you won't get all the information.
Okay.
And the other thing,
every time they ask, they say no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the legalities of that. But all I'm saying is, what they're telling the general public may not be what they're doing. But the other thing, of course, is that it's also entirely possible the phone is turned off and the battery is not connected or just dead in a doornail. You can't ping the dead, so to speak. So as far as that goes, early on, you'd think that somebody would have wanted to do that, but there are privacy laws and all sorts of things that come into play with that. But
all they have to do is call a judge and get a warrant.
Well, right, but you have to have a pretty good explanation why you're doing it.
They do. They have that silver alert down in Florida old people and mentally impaired people.
Well, if they've determined that, sure. And I would think that they absolutely could do that. I also think at this point in time, it probably will not be fruitful. So,
anything's possible. Give them a tighter search area.
Well, maybe not. It depends what's returned, if anything. But in any event,
at least they could see her history, where she's been, maybe.
Well, and so that's the next thing I would think. Even not in her right mind, it'd be unusual that she was going to an area that she had absolutely no connection to. And so on some level in her mind, she has a connection to this area, maybe somebody in this area. And so I would think the next thing is those who are close to her, of course, parents, but parents very often don't know much. If she has, an ex-spouse or ex-significant other, whatever the father of the child is, he might have an idea. Someone in her workplace might have an idea, but it sounds like she absolutely, right mind or not, left of her own volition.
Yeah, and she was, she was living in Tennessee like about a year ago, and her ex-roommate has not been contacted to see if she showed up there.
Well, it did.
So I don't know what the police are doing.
Well,
I really don't.
It would also be doubtful she did show up there because she went in the other direction.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You know, from Jacksonville to Broward County, so what is it in the Fort Lauderdale area that would have beckoned her? You know, had she spent time there? Does she have friends there? You know, rarely.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, rarely do you just take a dart and throw it on a map. Although when I used to drive the interstate system, that's exactly what I would do. But I wasn't trying to disappear. But for most people, they won't.
You're a rare person, Raleigh.
Yeah, right. Right. But most people won't do that. But so there's a reason in her mind, and
in her mind, right? There's a reason.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And.
Right.
Ultimately, she's going to run out. She's also, in X number of days, going to run out of the Adderall.
Yeah, so, that's the other thing. And I know it can be, it's bad for you to totally go off it. Like
well,
that.
So, and usually.
Maybe in her case, it might be better. Though.
Well, no, I mean, she obviously needs help. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, she definitely needs medical attention.
Yes, yes. What a fascinating story. And I can't imagine, I can't wait to hear, and I think we will hear, but I can't wait to hear the lack of logic or logic in her decisions and what was she doing and what did she think she was doing. But clearly...
Yeah, I can't wait to hear either. Right. I can't wait till they find her. The family's just beside themselves, you know, because...
Well... Somebody along the way wasn't watching too carefully about this situation, including whoever was prescribing the drug.
And, well, evidently she had been getting paranoid. She had been accusing people of certain things that
okay.
they weren't guilty
well,
of.
Well, so right there, right there, when you're starting to see that syndrome. You normally, those close to her, would want her to, you know, speak to her docs, the people writing the prescriptions. You know, of course, they'll say patient privacy and all that. But I would think that if the family was aware that she was starting to be delusional, that they would have been concerned long before she took off in her car for parts unknown.
Well, they were. They were, and, you know, a third party had to be called in, social services, and it was a whole big thing, but they thought they had it taken care of, I guess, you know?
Well, some doctors got a lot of splaining to do, and it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah,
so,
they got some splaining to do, that's right.
Hopefully, you know, the upshot will be that they find her, and she's alive and relatively safe and can get some help. But, you know, these are the things I find fascinating. I just can't wait to know what's in her mind. So
What she was thinking.
Yeah. What were you thinking now? Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either, but keep me posted.
I will. And about the Robert Blake thing, I totally think he did it.
Oh, yeah.
I totally think he did it.
Yeah, well, I think everybody thought he did it. But again, one of the problems was that Bonnie Lee Bakley was the most unsympathetic victim to ever live. And
she was hard to feel.
Yeah, and there was no shortage of people who wanted to kill her. So... It was circumstantial.
That's true.
When you have that and you have circumstantial evidence, it's not enough for a jury. And they deliberated a long time. It wasn't 2 hours and 45 minutes. It was a long time. And
I know. Yeah, quick verdict. You think, it's going to be guilty, you know. Well, but when they deliberate, it's like, oh my God, are they actually thinking innocent on this? I couldn't believe it.
Well, again, you know, I mean, I err on the side of I like conclusive evidence, and everything in this case was circumstantial. And with that number of people who had it in for this woman, I think it would be pretty hard for a jury to say that there was not a reasonable doubt. You know.
Well, look at Murtaugh, though. He got convicted on pretty much
evidence. That's right. But no one else was lining up to kill them. You know, and I found that interesting, too, as when talking to Detective Chuck. I think it was very circumstantial, and I still have trouble thinking that you would kill your wife and child because of your financial misdeeds. But on the other hand, this guy was pretty deranged.
Like he said, he'd been doing this for a while. He'd been doing sleazy stuff for a while, you know?
Well, and getting away with it.
So it just becomes easier and easier, you know?
Yeah. And
to do misguided things.
You know he's appealing. His defense team already...
Oh, he's appealing?
Of course. The defense team has already put in a 3-page filing that they're going to appeal. Of course
they
are.
You better not get on the stand again, because that's what sealed it for me. When I saw him on the stand, I said, oh, he did it. He totally did it. He was terrible on the stand.
Well, it wouldn't be in an appeal a case of him being on the stand. It's going to be interesting.
We'll get another trial.
Well, if it's overturned, but you know, that's we're a long way from that at this point. So it will be very interesting to see what you know, what the courts say about his lawyers. You know,
what
and
are
their
the grounds they're appealing on?
Yeah, see, it's we only have a little sketch of that. They'll be filing all sorts of things in the coming weeks.
I mean, I don't see any grounds for appeal.
Oh, yeah, there's always grounds for appeal. There's always grounds for appeal. Now, usually it's not successful, But yeah. But you know, you let's face it, especially when it's murder. There, you know, you absolutely are, as attorneys, are going to be filing an appeal. You know, unless the guy says, "Nope, I did it. That's it."
He totally did it.
So what the attorneys have filed is an appeal notice. So we don't know yet. I know part of it is, and this is very common in appeals, the preservation of the crime scene, things like that.
Well, you know how I can always tell murderers is their dead eyes. You look at a picture of them before the murder and a picture of them after the murder, and you can see how the life has gone out of their eyes. They have dead eyes.
Well, that very well may be, but I don't want a jury to convict on that basis.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want a jury to convict on that basis, but you can see it. You can see it. If you're looking, you can see it.
Well, I'll tell you, I've never seen Alex Murdaugh in person, but when I see the pictures of the family, I swear to God that family tree doesn't fork. There's something wrong with these people. And I know.
I was wondering that, too.
they don't look normal. They're a few cans short of a six-pack, and I don't know what the... what the deal is, but I'm sorry. I know it's not charitable, but I mean, the kids, especially the one who lived, oh my God. And so, you know, we'll see. So it'll be interesting, but we haven't heard the last of it, that's for sure.
Oh boy, I know. It's going to go on for a while.
Yeah. Well,
and you know who else? I'm so glad that they're finally, and he's rearing his ugly head again. That guy from Illinois, that one that killed his wife. And he had another wife now they're reopening that case. I think he was a cop.
Yes, he was. I remember that well, and now I got to think of his name. But
and he kept mugging for the cameras and everything.
Right.
Oh, the media loved him.
Right.
Oh, he had his three children. He was raising his three children, and he would come out and talk to the cameras every day. He thought it was a big joke.
Well, I'm sure that...
Gary something? Was it Gary something?
Somebody in Chicagoland will fill us in. So I'm sure of that.
And I was so glad he's out of the news media.
Yeah.
But now it's rearing its ugly head again because they're reopening one of the cases.
Well, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So, I don't know, but as I say, somebody in the Chicago area will know more of the details there. So it'd be interesting. Well, you know, I mean, let's face it. Anybody who says that there's nothing entertaining on television just isn't really looking at the trials.
Really? Oh, his name was Scott Peterson, too, wasn't it?
Oh, no. I don't know. Peterson was the guy in California who killed Lacey.
No, I know, but I think his name was Peterson, too. Greg Peterson or something.
Really?
Maybe.
Really? All right.
It was Peterson, too.
See, so somebody needs to fill me in, and I'm sure.
I don't know. My memory's like a sieve.
Well, it's better than mine, obviously, but somebody in Illinois will know. And I'm counting on it. All right, thanks. Peterson. Drew Peterson was his name.
Drew Peterson.
Drew Peterson. Yeah. All of a sudden that came to me. Yeah, and I can see his face in the mind's eye, and that was his third wife. And then the fourth wife disappeared.
Right.
And she's never been found.
She's never been found.
Yeah.
She's never been found.
Yeah, Drew Peterson, that was it. So
Drew Peterson.
He was
horrible. He was on TV every day mugging for the cameras. I just wanted to wring his neck. I hated him so much.
As far as I know, they transferred him out of state. He's still incarcerated, but he's not in Illinois.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. But again, somebody will know. I still wonder what happened to the fourth wife. You know.
Yeah, poor thing.
Yeah, Stacey Ann. All right.
Yeah.
Well. Expiring minds want to know. Yeah. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Yeah, Drew Peterson. I hadn't thought about him in a while. They're opening that case. Yeah. Well, where's Stacey Ann? All right. So, yes, we've devolved to this. All right. We'll get to Bob in Arlington Heights and Rick in Northern California. And we got Dennis as well. And there's room for you, too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Riley James, and yes, that's Junior Walker, the All-Stars. And it was Brian and Joliet who said, play Roadrunner. That's been a while, but we finally got around to it. 888-876-5593-8888. Riley, if it's on your mind, it's on mine. I think we prove that every minute. And, Dennis is in Lake Placid. So, Dennis, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, Riley, when you say if it's on your mind, it's on mine, you got to be careful saying that around me, because as ADHD as I am, I can swing the gamut in 20 minutes that will cover everything from A to Z.
Well, as long as they're not prescribing Adderall, we're okay.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, you sound wonderful.
Thank you.
When I heard what you had to do and go move and do all that stuff, after this event, I just like panicked. I thought, how is that gal going to do this? And moving scares the heck out of me because I still own everything I've ever bought. And every time I take something off the shelf, three other things fall off. And that's probably why I don't mind being gone 300 days a year.
I would guess. Yeah. Well, you know, I've lived in 32 cities. So, you know, if you moved, and I mean, there were some places, you know, I got there and the radio job I had or whatever, I realized this wasn't going to last very long. So I just took the boxes and painted them colors and put lamps on them. No reason to actually open them. So, I don't mind that. But my studio has the interesting issue of absolutely no window covering whatsoever. And it faces west in the Arizona sun. I'm just sitting here.
Afternoon.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't cool off. So I realize that, and I'm ordering custom blinds, but that takes a couple weeks to get and install. So I think I'm going to make it look like Patty Hearst's hideout and just tape towels to the walls.
Yeah, put a newspaper up.
Yeah, something like that, because thank God nobody, or at least I don't think anybody can see in, because it's not pornographic, it's a horror show right now, because, you know, I'm down to taking off the robe as I sweat. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, at least it's, you found a place.
Yes.
You've got fast internet, and
well,
so you're on the air.
Well, yeah, not fast enough as far as I'm concerned, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed, because there is this rumor that they may have business fiber. Now, depending on how far it is from me and what they'll charge me to bring it here, it may not be doable, because obviously I don't own this and I won't be here forever. But if it's in the hundreds, not in the many thousands, hell, I'll go for that. So we'll see.
Yep, we'll see. You bring up, gosh, old memory, and your show always does this, Bonnie C. Blakely. I haven't heard that name in years.
And
I don't remember too much about it. Well, I do, if you'd have told me the name, I wouldn't have known what it was in. You know, you filled in all the blanks.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, she was a bad news girl. There was no doubt about that.
She reminds me of somebody that had been in my family's life, who was a star chaser extraordinaire. There are other adjectives to describe it, but she ended up hooking up with the famous Chuck Yeager.
Oh!
And destroyed all the life, destroyed his family life. And that's a long story. She was a star chaser from way back, and had a long history of lawsuits and attempting to, you know, put marks on famous people, and got her clutches into poor Chuck, and it ruined Chuck's life. All of his legacy friends from all his years in the Air Force all disowned him, and nasty court battles, and she engineered the stealing of his assets away from Chuck's biological children. This is all public information. I'm not telling stories out of tail, but my family was connected with this, so it was kind of painful. He lived for many years in my hometown.
Oh,
so
wow.
We all knew him.
Oh, wow. Yeah, his first...
Not
his,
many people...
His first wife died.
People.
I remember that.
Yes, Glennis. Yes.
Right. And then he remarried. So was it the second marriage that...
Yes. And you can Google things in the New York, in the Los Angeles Times. Did an expose on her that is very telling. It's still findable on the web, I'm sure. But it was a sad deal.
So how was he available to be in her clutches? I mean, what did she have that he was willing to go nuts?
He basically admitted he was lonely and he wanted some action, and she was there. What happened, I'll develop the story one more step, is that she was chasing after famous people, and my brother is a very prominent person in the air vintage World War II air racing world, and she approached him posing as a reporter for the Los Angeles Times and a former actress, and she listed her credit, one of her credits, as appearing in the movie Witness. That's another story. So Tim, my brother, being a trusting person, said, well, yeah, I could get you an interview with Mr. Yeager because he hikes on this path every day behind his house on the weekends. So she went down there and haunted that path until he showed up and got her clutches into him. And it's a sordid, sad story. Because wow. Chuck's biological children lost everything to the estate.
Right. Yeah, No, I remembered that thing. And she was obviously like 35 years younger than he was whatever.
Yes.
And the kids accused her of undue influence and all that kind of stuff. Yep. But
she was basically run out of Los Angeles before she ever met him.
Victoria
so
Scott.
She was making money filing small claims lawsuits. I mean, awful. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Don't need to talk about that. Let me talk about something nice.
Yeah.
Ray Anthony, the sole surviving member of the Glenn Miller Orchestra, turned 101 last month. And I know this because he's very lucid and still got all his faculties.
Uh-huh.
And a good friend of mine was at his birthday celebration. That's how I know he's doing so well. And
wow.
Barry Gordy was there, too.
Oh, wow.
So...
Well, the only reason that I know much about him is he was probably did more Scopey tones than anyone else. And every now and then in North Miami, I'd go by Criteria or whatever, and there'd be Ray Anthony doing another Scopey tone. And there were a ton of those. So, other than that, had no idea. And wasn't he married to Mamie Van Doren?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think so.
Up,
no, I'm pretty sure.
Familiar.
Yeah, and he was tight with Hugh Hefner.
Oh, so, okay.
I remember that. So yeah, the Scopey tones, yeah. Mamie Van Doren and Hugh Hefner. That's all I know. I'm done.
Okay. One more thing. You know, you brought up Vitello's, where this event with Robert Blake happened. I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
And it kind of weirds me out because I love that place.
Right. Exactly.
I've been to several shows and personal album releases there and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a great place upstairs there.
Absolutely. I think the last time I was there actually was with Murray the K's last wife, Jackie Zeman. It's been a lot of years.
Oh.
But Vitello's is great. And that's where it was. Car was around the corner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, she
wow.
was just sitting in the car. But again, the only thing I can say in his defense is everybody wanted this woman dead. You know, there she is on the street. Hell, could have been anybody.
Yep. I know. She had a reputation like that in that town. I think Virginia, Truck's wife, probably did a good thing getting out of town because she had it. I think she had her name on a few lists, too.
Yeah.
Let me give you something to think about for a bumper.
Okay.
This is, bumper or a request. I'm a little more shy these days because you're a little more pickier on what you...
What I'm willing
what
to play,
like.
Yeah.
But this woman, she was an R&B singer, turned country. Faded from my memory until something reminded me of it here recently, and I can't remember what, but Linda Martell.
Oh.
Quite a story.
Okay.
Quite a story to her. I think she was the first black woman ever to be in the...
It's certainly commercially
opera.
Successful in country, yeah. Thelma Bynum was her name, actually, and she'd been a bus driver. And so, sure, Linda Martell. And the first black female solo artist to play the Opry. And,
the Opry, yeah.
Yeah.
She did R&B before she did country.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll find something in her catalog you'd like.
Well,
I'll leave that up to you.
I'll look
you
for it. Well, you know, she did a version of Color and Father. And so that was...
I remember hearing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the one I think of mostly. She was in South Carolina. Yeah. So,
Something, the hugs I do for you or something like that.
Yeah, so, sure, I can probably find something from Linda. Hadn't thought about her in a while. Why not?
She is still alive, too.
Yeah. Well,
I did look her up.
Yeah, I think she's probably, early 80s. She wasn't all that old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I realize early 80s is not exactly young, what the deal was, Shelby Singleton signed her to Plantation, and so that's how she got a lot of that country stuff, and that's where she did a version of Before the Next Teardrop Falls, and she had one album on Plantation, Color Me Country, and so that was Shelby who signed her. I'll find something.
Yeah, I should look her up, too, and play some of her stuff.
Yeah.
She's got quite a story. It's kind of a sad story, too, the way it ended with country. In Nashville, I guess there were threats and stuff because they had a black woman on stage. I don't remember the full story, but, it isn't all pretty.
Well, no, there sadly a lot of racism. I remember when at RCA they were trying to get Charlie Pride signed, they played it and everybody loved it, and then they were showing pictures and they said, well, no, not him, the guy who was doing that race. And no, that is the guy who was doing that record. And and he never had any problems, but he was not a Nashvillian. He basically stayed away. But and then there were others occasionally, but no one of note. But the other thing about Nashville that people didn't realize is there was just a wonderful R&B community that was not on Music Row that produced a lot of great stuff, not necessarily hits, but a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll find one of those too, play for you.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I will let you go. I'm sure we're up against a break pretty soon. John sounds wonderful.
Yes, I agree. All right.
And my best to both of you.
Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Have a good night.
All right. So 888-876-5593. We're talking about radio with Rick in Northern California. Don in Beloit has a request. We'll find out what that is. Bob in Arlington wants to talk about Robert Blake. And boy, he's been hanging on a while. So Bob gets the chair next. And now I'll either find some Linda Martell or some of the R&B that was produced in Nashville that no one ever hears. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Living and working in the city, I thought I was a big girl. Oh, I felt so smart in my own life. So Miss Smarty found herself a city guy who one night said he loves her. And the next night he leaves her sitting with a bad case of the blues.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Linda Martell, and she is absolutely on Plantation Records. There, Shelby Singleton produced that. It was written by a couple of women, including one who owned a little label in Shreveport, but I thought Bad Case of Blues was a great little record, so I'm glad that Dennis brought her up. And yes, we will play some R&B that you don't usually hear. Ted Jarrett was responsible for a lot of that stuff in Nashville, and including he wrote stuff that, like, even people like Webb Pierce covered. And you get things that Ted Jarrett wrote, like Gene Allison, You Can Make It If You Try, and of course those are well known. But there are so many interesting little you know, North Nashville acts that never really made it outside the zip code, like Rufus Hunter and Rufus and Roots doing Caught Up. Maybe we'll play that next. Hard to say. 888-876-5593. Bob is in Arlington Heights, or at least he was. Are you still with us, Bob?
Oh, I'm still here.
Well, thank you.
Raleigh, it's good to hear you back on the air, and it was good to talk to John again and see that he's on the road back.
Yeah.
I shared this with him, back in at the time that the unfortunate demise of Bonnie Lee Blakely occurred. We didn't have Twitter and all of those things, but I remember reading a blurb somewhere that one of his defenses could have been that maybe he stopped back in the restaurant to use the payphone to call Bill Shatner and tell him that they weren't going to be able to make it to the pool party that
day. Yeah. Yeah, boy. That was great.
But then you guys were talking about Drew Peterson.
Yes.
And, for those of us here in Chicago, before Drew went down for the conviction on his third wife, while his fourth wife was missing and before the third wife trial came about, concurrent with that was another lady from the area here by the name of Lisa Stebbick, and her husband was a guy by the name of Craig Stebbick, and both of those cases were going on at about the same time, and there was a rather prominent TV personality on NBC here in Chicago who ended up going to Craig's house for personal interest interview with the kids and everything, and it ended up pretty much costing her job because of the lack of objectivity. But my wife, who tolerates my sense of humor, was in the car with me one day, and back to back there were news items on the missing Lisa Stebbick and then the missing Stacy Peterson. And when the news ended, my wife said, "Now wait a minute. These guys take their wives up to the woods in Michigan. They're never seen again. And they go on and just live their lives as normal, and they get away with it. How does that happen?" And I, like I said, she tolerates my personality. I said, "Honey, if I knew the answer to that, we wouldn't be having this chat." But she...
That's great.
We'll celebrate 29 years of marriage this year, but I thought I would share that with you.
That's classic.
But it's so good to have you back on the air, and we're so happy to hear that John is recovering.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And pretty soon, the good news is it looks like you won't have a lot of interruptions with Blackhawk playoff games this year, so
no, but next
you should get a full schedule.
Next week, we'll have a full Monday show, but then Tuesday through Thursday, there'll be interruptions, I think, mostly basketball.
Yeah, but it'll be over soon.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Glad to have you back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Call me soon. All right. Okay. So, Lisa Stebbick. I forgot all about that. And, you really do wonder. Yeah, Stacy Peterson and Lisa Stebbick. Wow. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And Don in Beloit has a request, so let's find out what it is. What do you want to hear, Don?
I just loved that you were doing the Bossa Nova portion of your show. That was pretty great. But all this has been great with that Linda Martell. Wow, that was really amazing.
Yeah.
But I tell you, I've seen Astrud several times in concert, and she's just, she's always so amazing. But I think you gotta like play. I think the best of the best that she ever did was that version of that "To Me Delirio" song from the 50s in the original Portuguese. I had a friend, translate it for me one time, but she just has so much range, and that "To Me Delirio," that's the best of the best, I think, of that whole genre, and the best that she ever did, I think.
Everybody did that, including Nat King Cole.
And Nat King Cole had a great piano version of that. Right.
And, of course, Astrid Gilberto and so many others. So who do you want to hear it by?
The Astrid.
Oh, you do?
Astrid version.
Okay, yep. Great. Yes, a very unwilling singer. Yeah, she...
that's exactly right.
All right, I'll bet you it's on this computer.
So
my pleasure. Thanks for calling. All right. Bye-bye. So I will indeed find that. And next hour, we're going to talk about radio with Rick in Northern California. But there's room for you, too, coming up another hour of this right here on WGN Radio.
En el fondo de mi corazón, mi amor por ti. Este amor delirante que abraza mi alma. Es pasión que atormenta mi corazón. Estás conmigo, con mi tristeza. Estás en mi alegría y en mi sufrir.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Astrid Gilberto. And no, it is not Brazilian or Portuguese. It's actually Cuban. And Cesar Portillo de la Luz wrote that. And he was a really well-known lyricist and did music as well. But he was the guy who was credited with the fillin music genre. And fillin, it's F-I-L-I-N. Is interesting because it really meant feeling, and there was a radio show that he had that was doing it. So we're talking about, you know, late 40s through the 50s, the fillin, you know, movement, and that was all over Cuba and Havana prior to the revolution. And actually, it survived the revolution, but not for long. Yeah, the whole timber of the area had changed, but everybody from Nat King Cole to Christina Aguilera had done the fillin genre. So there you have it, and fine with me. And I will get to that Rufus record so you can hear the other side of Nashville, North Nashville, that you don't really hear much about. Rick in Northern California, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh.
How are you?
Yes, I'm doing good. Good, good. It's nice, cold, snowy, now rainy out here. It's just been my type of weather, which basically I wanted to get this real quick question out of the way. I think you mentioned that you used to live in Spearfish, South Dakota.
No, I didn't live there. I actually traveled through it quite a lot, and yes, had my tornadic experience one night in Spearfish.
That's what I wanted to mention, because you see, one day, like 55% of the rest of us, one day when we decide we want to get the hell out of the state, and, you know, I've been contemplating like everybody else, and I was looking, and I haven't really been to that part of the country. If anywhere I've been in the U.S. is that part is Western South Dakota, and I wanted to see possibly the Rapid City, and then you mentioned Spearfish and Deadwood, and there was another the motorcycle town Sturgis, and
yes.
I was thinking about taking a trip up there in the early summer, springtime, and see that area, see if I want to really move there, because I hear good things about
it. Yeah, no, it's the tip of the Black Hills, and it is very pretty. It is isolated. You know, your big feeder city is Rapid City, which is not big. So as long as you don't as long as you don't mind being away from population, because I don't know, Spearfish maybe has 10,000-11,000 people, not a whole lot. It's in Lawrence County, but even Rapid City is not particularly big. So that's the only thing I would say.
The only part you mentioned that you had there was a tornado. Does that part of South Dakota get tornadoes?
Well, not
this mountainous.
Right, not normally, but it was cells within a thunderstorm, and that can happen anywhere.
Right. I mean, we can get them out here, too. It's
exactly.
It's not the same type of tornado like Texas, Oklahoma.
No. You will never have to worry in Spearfish that you're going to turn into Tornado Alley. It doesn't happen.
Oh, good. Good, then I'll continue my trip.
Yeah, absolutely, and certainly worthy of checking it out. But again, I caution you, it really is isolated, so depending on what you're looking for in terms of services.
Well, we talk about out here, Dennis, everywhere I move to an open spot, just in a building, I got 25 people joining me because I'm there.
Right. Right.
I just, you know what I mean, over here, I just don't like, I don't like crowds anymore like I used to.
Well,
it's just, it gets too crowded.
You'll get a lot of tourists because, of course, Spearfish is between Mount Rushmore and the Devil's Tower, so you get
a
lot of these tourists.
I understand
tourists.
That.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just when you get crowds and crowds, I'm always worried about my area where I live and about something going up that I don't want it to go up. And I know the town does fight it, but we just don't want the, you know, the Bay Area metropolis to follow us out.
Right. No, I don't think you'll get it. I think that Spearfish, for the most part, very low crime. You know, it's not a place that people are flocking to. I think Idaho, more than anywhere else, is where Californians wind up these days.
Well, yes, I know. I've been had to go out for business in Coeur d'Alene, and I thought I was in Sacramento at the time. I mean, I saw Kings jerseys and crazy.
Yes, yeah, no, it's. I mean, my Coeur d'Alene goes back to when the best view in town was in the parking lot of the Pizza Hut, and of course today that's the Coeur d'Alene Resort. You know, so it's a lot different. But
the town tripled. I've been there. I was there in the 90s. I got back there in 2017, and. I mean, Governor's Way, like I remember, I always had trouble finding the shopping district because I was downtown, and then south of it's the boat ports toward Hayden Lake or something. And I just like, wow, where do I go? And then I realized, and when I came out there the second time, I had no trouble finding a whole bunch of shopping centers and places and so forth to go. And it was nice. Yeah. I mean, and there was something going on that weekend anyway, but still wasn't the density that you have when you want to go to Lake Tahoe, which has gotten ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So that's, well, I'll tell you, I have something in here on the background just in case you or everybody else wants to hear it. What it is, I was looking at this, first of all, GPT, and now I'm looking here at this radio GPT. Because I was hearing a couple of guys in the morning talking about it, worrying about their jobs. So I managed to get onto this website, and it's playing the music like an automation system, but in between, it has everything from liners, intros into the songs, PSA features, and these are robots that are sounding like you and me.
Yeah.
Oh, matter of fact, I guess I'm like, we can do that here. That's a robot there. I'm just listening in the background there. You know, and it's just male, female, you name it.
Right.
It can do it all. So that is something that is really interesting. And then I was looking at, because, you know, I like to do quite a few side hustles, and I got caught up with a guy here, and something I'm going to do as far as marketing, and it gives me more of an SEO experience. And this is GPT software that will design your website, will do your SMS. And I'm looking at this type of stuff. It will cost me $90 a month, but hey, I can use this as a tax write-off anyway. But I'm looking at this stuff, and I mean, now, I mean, would you say, let's say you take WGN and many of the major stations, are they really now having, are they really worried now lately what they're facing besides the voice tracking that has been threatening and automation that's been threatening? Now we have robots that can just go ahead and talk up a song.
Well, but I think WGN's in a unique position because they, you know, obviously all the content is talk, which is a little different than the GPT model, and they don't sell it out with infomercials and garbage like most talk stations on the weekends. Oh my God, you know, but I don't think GN has anything to worry about. But what you're really talking about is the music stations, of course.
And, yeah, they're in trouble. They're definitely
and,
in trouble.
Well, and what it's really going to come down to is, you know, is what they're playing. And, you know, I hesitate saying that because ultimately what it should come down to is the content of local and live and all that. But forget about it. But Futuri out of Cleveland launched Radio GPT. And, you know, I don't know. I have not been listening to it. I know that it's not going to suddenly play my obscure R&B oldies. So
but it can.
It can, but it won't. But
No. I mean, well, you know, it's so weird. It's that, you know, a few changes. You can see the evolving doom and gloom coming up, especially this past week, a couple of things that have happened. And first of all, like, I got this chart. I don't know how it made it to my Google News on my phone. When you talk about the formats, whether if it's live or going to be GPT, country was the number one growing format of stations across the nation.
For years.
And then, of course, news talk, but you got the religion, contemporary Christian, Spanish, the variety stuff. They were the next ones on the line. Mm-hmm. And top 40 or barely made the top 10, but is also declining significantly of who's going into that format. And then anything that's current, like top 40, adult contemporary, or hot AC, they all didn't make the top 10. Classic hits, classic rock, they made the 7 and 8 and so forth, and they broke. But not these formats, and it just shows that radio is showing its age.
Well,
pretty much.
Top 40 is more than any other format dependent upon the quality of current music. And you can look at the history of Top 40 radio and its ebbs and flows, and you can tie it directly to what was out there. You know, when Top 40, of course, died in the latter 70s and then came back with a vengeance in the early 80s, you looked at what the music was. You know, you're hearing the Rhythmics, and you're hearing Thomas Dolby and all this stuff that is decidedly perfect for Top 40. So it's very dependent upon that product. So I'm not the least bit surprised that at the moment Top 40 is not the darling of anything. Country is also, you know, country is not surprising either because it's like it's not your grandfather's country. I mean, country today is really male AC. You know, I mean, more than anything to me. And women listen too, of course, but I mean, you know, where traditionally the AC things, you think about love songs with Delilah, country is truly a male AC format, and people who come out of classic rock like it. In fact, one of the things we do on our country station in Globe is the oldies are pretty much classic rock, and because it blends well with it. So, you know, I mean, right. I'm not going to hear my Nat Stuckey's that often, which I understand, you know.
I don't hear the Johnny Duncan's Johnny Rodriguez.
Right. Well, exactly.
Not that far.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, Gene Watson ain't doing Love in the Hot Afternoon anytime soon.
Oh, that was awesome. Violin jam. Yeah. I like that song.
Philly Gumbo,
and,
you know, yes.
I'll do a lot of good things there.
Yeah.
Let me admit, another thing, too, is, well, I guess you've probably heard as well, XM Radio laid off a significant amount of people. What do you think that's going to go? I've always said that's going nowhere, but now I'm starting to realize I think people don't have to really pay for that unless it can continue with the Stern and it's coming up with its own content. That's what it's got to do, and I think it's going more towards streaming instead of who needs a satellite. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what you say about Stern is really the key, and that's also the key to local radio or whatever. When you have a personality who is unique and non-duplicable, then you've really got something, and that's what XM has with Stern. But other than that, I don't think they've ever been good at ad sales, for one thing. They basically modeled themselves on a subscription model, but they absolutely should have understood how to sell commercials on the commercial-oriented you know, networks, streams that they have on that service, and they're just terrible at it. So, yeah, I think it was 425 people or 8%. Now, NPR is laying off 10% of their workforce. So,
well, I mean, I tell you, the Republicans take over, I'm sure they would lay it off more when they start cutting more of that budget.
Well,
one day. you know, as far as NPR. I mean, I've been inside an NPR station, and I tell you, they have some of the greatest equipment
yes.
compared to your commercial radio
oh, yes.
stations. I saw Scully tape decks. I mean, back then, but you know, it's all government funded.
Right. Well, and right, and underwriting as well, of course. So, sure. It's but that said, I mean, right now everybody's contracting to a degree. They're trying to do more with less, and I think that's more of a story about the economy than it is about media.
Right. Well, and then of course, when you mention the music too, as far as another thing, nobody's paying for music, so it really doesn't matter what these stations want to add on, unless it kind of goes for a specific gender, specific age demographic. That's what makes what you would call the hit song, because radio back then, as far as I remember, was getting that song, getting it played so it sells that hit record and it gets onto the charts and the Billboard magazine.
Well, right.
Billboard does nothing to deal with radio, with the media base. They
yeah.
have nothing in common. The positions are so different. If you went to research it, what gets played, what sells, if whatever sells. I don't know how you even have to continue on.
Well, and when you say sells, 80% of the revenue is coming from streaming. It's not coming
that's
from.
That's what they're using? Okay.
Yeah. So that's where the money is. And that's a, you know, I don't even speak to that because that's so different than the industry I was in. I don't know what makes a tick. But I do know statistically that 80% of all of the cash in recorded music is streaming right now.
Well, you know, something's wrong with me or whatever. But, you know, these days when I get into a car, and let's say I'm traveling for 30 minutes. You know, back when I was a teenager, young person, 20s, 30s, I mean, I turned the radio on before I would turn the engine on.
Yes.
I mean, that was the first thing that goes on. Now, I could drive in, whether I have a passenger or just me, and, I mean, the radio may not even be turned on. I'll drive silent for out of a 30-minute trip. 20 minutes before I turn something on, unless I know I need to listen to a talk show. When it comes to music, it's like I'm hesitating to want to turn anything on because it just really is not driving me to do that.
Right.
Where, you know, wow, I can't wait to listen to the latest hits. Today, I'm just not driven to put the radio on like I used to.
No, absolutely. And of course, you know, you're probably squarely in the demographic that they don't care about anymore, like you know, many of us are. And there's very little that's programmed directly to us.
Well, yes. I mean, it's not like, hey, just because I turn 40 or 50 or 60, I'm going to drop everything. Because, you know, as far as the history of the music industry, the charts, everything overlaps. Nothing just dies and goes away. It battles until it gets faded out. Finally said, it's gone. And I just feel it's just the songs that I try to listen to. I mean, I got a list here off of Spotify, and I grab what I like on the media chart that I can listen to. But it doesn't wow me. It
right.
doesn't thrill me. I just don't get into it, and I wouldn't spend 74 cents or a buck
right.
to buy that single like I used to have back then when I was a teenager. I mean, I was addicted to that, but... I mean, I'm going to listen to talk first before I listen to that.
Yeah, anymore. No, I'm well aware, and that goes back cyclical to what you started at the beginning. Top 40 right now is not doing well. The music's not there.
No, it isn't, definitely. And the imaging and the programming, they're boring. They get some guy over there in a major market station, he would be considered media market quality. He would be media market. I mean, he would be good for, let's see, Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
Quality.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that. And of course, you look at the major groups and all of them are so cash strapped that it's not a case of them being greedy, it's a case of them trying to survive.
Well, that's what happens when you buy too many stations.
Oh, at ridiculous prices, of course.
Too many houses.
Yeah.
Too many Airbnbs.
Yeah.
One more quick thing there. I wanted to mention here. It's funny, when you had trouble finding a place in Phoenix during Super Bowl weekend, well, listen to this story. A guy had 70 properties of Airbnb, mm-hmm. and he was going to make a fortune on the Super Bowl week. And, well, he put up the homes $900 a night.
Uh-huh.
A day.
Right.
And out of the 70 homes, And then he realized, you know what, this is not going too well. So he dropped it from $900 to $300 a night. You know what he filled? Only 45% of the 70 Airbnb properties that he owned.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
That's a killing. Yeah, so that was it. I mean, I don't know if you wanted to spend $900 a night in one of those places, but he had something there.
Well, everybody was gouging. Like, I had to be in hotels for the entire month of February because of, you know, John being in the hospital and all that. And the 3 days surrounding the Super Bowl, it was $600 a night.
Mm.
You know, and I was nowhere near it.
His property for $300.
Yeah. I needed to be where I was. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I'm about to blow the news, and I don't want to do that.
Okay,
so
sure.
We'll pick it up right there. And apologies to Dan for that on WGN Radio.
My feet on solid ground. If you plan to make a fool of me, why don't you just set me free? Because I'm caught up, I'm caught right up, I'm caught up in your love and your sweet love and your love. You get home, you run in your mouth. I can put up with that too, but I hope you don't think I'm a fool, because I'm caught up, I'm caught right up, I'm caught up in your love.
WGN Radio. I'm Roddy James, and that is Rufus Hunter, Rufus and Roots. Yeah, on TJ, Ted Jarrett's label. And that's what was going on in North Nashville while all that country was on Music Row. And I thought Caught Up was a great little record. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Roddy, and we're talking to Rick in Northern California, and I forget about what.
Oh, well, anyway, I got a good request here if you want to answer them off. How about it? Let's do a good Saturday night dance party record. Gotta Find a Way, Teresa Lindsay.
Oh, of course. Oh, man, that is Philadelphia all the way. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was we were kind of talking about, right, the I guess we started getting into a little bit of the economy, and in Phoenix now, I know that a lot of people, like we were mentioning, flocked to the Idahos, Austin, Texas. Is now these cities are starting to find these people becoming underwater. A lot of them moved out, bought a house. Sure, they had maybe a profit on the home, but these rates that continue to come up, guess what? That whatever you pocket, it isn't so good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if many of them had a job or anything when they went and relocated. They just came along and just bought things unseen and flocked whatever they could. And I mean, it is going to be a turmoil of homes. And I know Phoenix is one of them, and they're down like 20 years. They're seeing 20% inventory popping up more and more. And what is it? 300 real estate agents quit a week in Las Vegas. They're going to have to go back. And get a regular, get a real retail job or something. And you just hope they save. You know, it's a mess out there. And it's just, I can't believe how much, I think a lot of things that went wrong was giving out those stimulus checks along with printing the money and having that fiat currency, and now this has come back to get all of us. As far as usually I get taxes back, but I'm lucky if I break even. But at least I have money in the bank to cover anything that I need here. So you know what I mean. And I can't believe that I've done so well compared to what? What is it? 52%. They don't have more than $1,000.
Oh, I know. That is so frightening. And the amount of people who have terrific debt, I don't know how they sleep at night. So, yeah.
I don't, but you see here, you never would believe. Of course, I already saw the, you know, your eyes and your jaw just drops down. And where they're continuing to flock out the Tahoe with what money? But I know it's credit card. And it's, what is it? It's $1 trillion in debt there. I think it's more than what we owe the rest of the world. It's amazing. And they just continue to find and continue the party. Which, I mean, they're dancing on the floor, but there's no band playing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if it continue, I don't know how long this can continue.
See,
to
that's
go
it.
On.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you see housing prices that basically nobody can afford, now when the interest rates were 3% or whatever, and people were saying, you know, well, what are the payments rather than what is the house cost? That's something. But you're getting into territory where the interest rates are considerably higher than that. The housing prices are just insanity. And you wonder, the entire economy basically was always devoted to, you know, you saved a down payment, you got your house, and then your house could develop equity, and you, but people aren't getting there anymore. And I don't know where this went.
No one ever looked at the property tax.
Right.
I mean,
well, now you're into something. And see, we don't have that because you know, we have we have three properties in Globe, and all three together don't cost me $1,000 a year in property tax. But I have a very good friend who has, oh, it's probably a $2 million house. And his property taxes annually is $44,000 a year. And he said, well, my house is paid for. I said, no, it's not. You're renting it from the city.
No, the house owns you. The property owns you.
Well, when you're...
And, I mean,
I don't get it. You know, but I mean, it's not unusual to see modest houses in places like New Jersey and stuff where people are paying $17,000, $18,000 a year. So I don't get it.
Well, I don't care. I mean, I'm sitting back because, you know, I can't believe I'm 80. I would consider myself 85% ahead of everybody as far as savings. I'm talking cash.
Yeah.
I'm talking net. Than the rest of it, and I can't believe it. And some of them, when it comes to their assets, or I can say artificial or on paper assets that have more than me, that's on paper. And
yeah.
I always look at it as if you don't hold it, you don't own it.
Right. Right, yeah.
And it's fascinating. I don't know how this has got to be. I know how it is because I know everybody in California, Northern California, life is a party. It's Mardi Gras, and it's celebrations where there's nothing to celebrate, but they'll celebrate.
Yeah.
With their hat on backwards. And it's this mentality. It's amazing what I see every day.
Oh, no, I know. Well, we'll talk about Teresa Lindsay because she's got an interesting story all the way around, and I'll play God of Highway for you. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, let's hear that.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Sure. Bye.
All right. Yeah. No, Teresa was, she's from Romulus originally, you know, in Detroit suburb, and, you know, singing in church and all that, and family would only let her listen to gospel, you know, a pretty typical story. And when she heard Mary Wells do her first song, Bye Bye Baby, she said, this is what I want to do. I want to be a singer. And she went to Motown, and they heard her voice, and they said, yeah, you're on the label. And her mother said, no, you're not. You're in school, and you're not having any of that. And when she graduated in '63, she didn't go to Motown. She said she didn't want to. This time she auditioned at Correct Tone, and she said, you know, show business is what I wanted. I didn't care what anybody said. I was going to pursue it. And, you know, she was doing lead at a guy group that no one ever heard of and all that kind of stuff. But she got auditions, and the audition at Correct Tone was Golden, Wingate, and Bratton. And they liked her as far as that goes. In fact, the guy she was fronting for, they didn't like that group, but they liked liked her. And so she chose Correct Tone, and she said she didn't think she'd be happy at Motown. And so that was an interesting. And the debut record was Gotta Find a Way, which was interesting because Popcorn Wiley and Janie Bradford wrote it. And of course, Motown staffers, Janie was at the time, used a pseudonym, Nikki Todd. And Popcorn did a lot of writing with her as well. And Wingate from Golden World financed a lot of that stuff. Benny Benjamin was the drummer on it, and in fact, Benny Benjamin wanted Teresa to sing Latin music, and yeah, she said she probably wasn't going to do that. But "Gotta Find a Way" was a regional hit and a strong regional hit. You know, places like Philadelphia, like Detroit, but national hit. Forget about it. Not a chance. And next record they had her do, she didn't like it all, with Sugar Mountain, and Atlantic picked it up. But Atlantic also had distributed, by the way, Gotta Find a Way. And you know, she continued going ahead and singing in Detroit, doing a lot of background sessions and stuff like that. And then Van McCoy wrote for her as well. And It's Love and Good Idea were a couple of them. And that also, it didn't sell. And so, you know, around that time, that was the end of, you know, Golden World, of course, was bought by Berry Gordy. And there were others, you know, Wingate and Golden, who wound up really, you know, not able to continue to do this. And so that pretty much was it for the independent labels like Golden World. And that was her last Detroit recording. And it was interesting because there again, Berry Gordy would have taken her, and she said, I didn't want to go to Motown. And I don't know why exactly. She just said, been there, done that, not interested. And she continued, and sadly, never did anything again. But Gotta Find a Way is a great record, and we'll play it. We'll also talk to Frank in Northlake, who's got a request as well, which will it's always good to talk to Frank. And I think that'll wrap it up for tonight. Monday night, there's a full show, 3 hours of music trivia, and then the rest of the week, it's a little abbreviated. So in the meantime, if you want the final word, maybe you can get in, but I think I'm going to let Frank from Northlake have it. Coming up on WGN Radio.
He's tough, strong and handsome, got a charming smile. He always dresses in the latest style. I gotta find a way to make him mine. Yeah, yeah, cause he's so fine. I gotta find a way, yeah, I gotta find a way. Gotta find a way to make him mine. Yeah, 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 yeah. He walks
a great little record. Got to Find a Way on Correct Tone, Teresa Lindsay, and yeah, Ed Wingate was involved with that, and Wilbert Golden, and sadly, both kind of opted out of the business, and ultimately, I was trying to find out what was it Teresa didn't like about Motown when after Golden was sold to them, and the answer was actually simple. I should have thought of it on my own, but she in an interview had been quoted, and she said, you know, they had great female talent over there, and the only one they ever promoted was Diana. Interesting. So she said, I don't want to be part of that. And I think she's still with us, and she is still in the Detroit area. So 888-876-5593. Frank in Northlake. How's it going tonight, Frank?
Hello, Raleigh.
How are you?
Good. It was great to hear Jan again.
Yeah.
Answering the phone, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Yes, I am. And how are you doing tonight?
I'm tired. It's been a tough week getting the studio built and all that. And I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to going to sleep.
Right on. Yeah, and what you mean?
Yeah.
A little while ago, you were talking with someone about Antonio Flabin.
Yes.
So there's a lot of great stuff, and you kind of reminded me of some bossa novas that I really like.
Yeah.
And then the real slow ones like, about Disciplinado.
Right.
Was Paul Desmond on sax on that?
Well, there are so many versions of it that, yeah, on some of them. I mean, there's over 300 versions of that song.
Wow. Well, it was around in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. So, no, absolutely. But I mean,
kind of a mover.
Yeah, it was
kind of like,
absolutely. But because there are so many versions, yeah, I'm sure Paul Desmond was on probably several of them.
Yeah, it was instrumental.
Yeah.
But my request, I have, first of all, I'll give you the request, and then I have a question about Burt Bacharach. I saw a special on Channel 11. And it was beautiful. It was dynamite. I'd love to see it again. It was one of the greatest ones I've seen recently, aside from Karen Carpenter. It was about Bacharach.
Uh-huh.
Recently passed.
Yes.
Who was the female vocalist that sang the duet with him on a tune that I heard by the Anita Kerr singers in the late 60s, early 70s. A House Is Not a Home. Man, what a beautiful duet they did. This guy, well, he could sing too, Bacharach. What a writer. Man.
Well, Dionne Warwick recorded that, A House Is Not a Home.
Yes.
I thought
I heard the Anita Kerr singers do it too.
Well, I wouldn't
unless
be
they were the backup for Dionne.
Wouldn't be surprised. It was written in 64, and it was a movie. A House Is Not a Home. Shelley Winters was in that movie, and so then Dionne Warwick recorded it at Bell in New York, and Brooke Benton recorded it. I'm trying to think of who else. Well, I know later Luther Vandross, but that's not it. But Warwick was, you know, like I say, the first one. It was a B-side. The A-side was You'll Never Get to Heaven If You Break My Heart.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So, yeah.
Oh, she was good. She did a lot of great tones. And
yeah.
We had the greatest music in my time, I'll tell you.
Oh, sure. Now, the Anita Kerr singers had it a cappella, and on that was in 69, though. That was much later. That was on the Reflect album. The album was called Reflect, and it was an album cut.
Okay.
But, I mean, everybody recorded that. I mean, Della Reese and Lainey Kazan and Shirley Bassey and Cher and Mavis Staples and you name it. And Dusty Springfield. Now, in 1970, Dusty Springfield performed it with Burt Bacharach on a TV special. So
That was what it was.
Okay.
I saw them.
Yeah, that was
next to the piano.
Right, that was Dusty Springfield. But that was a TV special, not a song, not a record.
Right. Yeah, that's where I saw it on Channel 11.
Yeah, well, that's what it was.
That's right. Come to think of it now, I remember now. Thank you.
Sure.
Dusty Springfield.
And then,
right.
Barbara Streisand did it, Sarah Vaughan. I mean, you know, it's one of those records that, Aretha Franklin did that record. So there's, you know, you name it. But yeah, the TV thing that you're talking about, I can see that in the mind's eye. And actually, I see it in black and white because that's the only TV I saw back then, even though it was a color show. Dusty Springfield. And Another Evening with Burt Bacharach.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And, wow. Now, you mentioned Shirley Bassey.
Yeah.
Didn't she do Goldfinger?
Oh, of course.
Well, yeah.
Of course. Okay,
and aside from Desafinado, I don't know, well, there's someone that's like, you know, like, that's the tempo.
Right.
And How Insensitive by Tony Bennett.
Right.
It's a nice, slow, lazy bass, but man, the lyrics and the sound.
Right. And that's done by half the world as well. You know, most of those Jobim songs were recorded by like 200 people.
Wow. Yeah, well, that guy was, he was a... Wow.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. But yeah, Jobim recorded it with Frank Sinatra, for instance. I mean, it's one of those things that was around forever. The English lyrics to that was Norman Gimbel. But of course, I never really liked the English translations because it didn't work.
It took away.
Yeah, it just
took away.
It did. It really did. But yeah.
What about Hal David? Was he a lyricist or an arranger? I know it's in Burt Bacharach with Hal David.
Yeah, well, Hal David was probably, he was a lyricist, and he was probably Burt's biggest writing partner. But not only, there were, Burt Bacharach had other writing partners besides, but the big, big hits were the, you know, Hal David, Burt Bacharach songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've ended the night. You need to call me next week and call me earlier.
Okie doke, I will.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
I've been getting in late.
All right.
Great
Good to hear from you.
Again,
thanks.
Okay, tonight.
All right. We thank Dan for keeping us on the air and for writing my levels, and I'm just terrible at it, so a debt of gratitude to Dan. We thank John for screening your calls, but above all, I thank you for calling. So until Monday, when we'll have a full trivia show. That's right, 10 o'clock Monday. That's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.